this whole quantum thing, every other scientific guest that I have these days, at the end of the line, we end up talking about quantum this and quantum that. Can you explain for the audience what this whole field of study, this quantum field of study, is in some way that we can grasp and understand it?
Well, I can try. It's a very deep and mysterious subject. It was developed, quantum physics that is, in the 1920s and 1930s because scientists found that when they studied the small realm, the realm of molecules and atoms and subatomic particles, they found that those ingredients operated according to very different laws, very different rules from the ones that apply on everyday scales.
Huh.
And that, at one level, is incredibly surprising because everybody thought that, yes, you know, the micro world is smaller, but the laws are still the same old laws that we're familiar with.
But they're not the same laws.
But they're not the same old laws, and in retrospect, why should they be? Why should everyday experience be a good guide into a realm that's so different from everyday?
Can you describe in what way the rules vary?
Sure.
At that level?
The most important way in which they vary is we are used in everyday life to, if you carry out an experiment, you throw a baseball through the air,
right,
if you know enough about the motion of the baseball, you can predict with absolute certainty where the baseball will land. And this is what we have thought about physics from the time of Newton. But when you go into the micro world, you learn that the laws are not like that. The best you can ever do, according to quantum physics, is predict the probability that things will turn out one way or another. It is absolutely impossible, according to quantum physics, to be able to predict with absolute certainty the outcomes of experiments in the micro world. And that is a very, very different framework, a probabilistic framework for how the
universe
evolves.
Well, you've sort of lost me, I think. When you get to the quantum world, you can't predict anything. And I'm still thinking of throwing the baseball, right?
Say it again.
I'm still thinking of throwing the baseball, right?
Yeah.
And in what different way that would happen in the quantum world.
Well, imagine you throw an electron instead of a baseball.
Okay.
It's like a little baseball, just much, much smaller.
Gotcha.
And when you study the motion of that electron using the laws of quantum physics, here's what you find.
Oh.
You find that there's like a 13% chance that it'll land over here. There's a 22% chance that it will land over there. There's a 12% chance it will land over there and so forth.
Oh.
And that is very different.
So the laws of motion, then.
That's right, are different.
The laws of motion are different. Wow.
And here's the thing that I really should stress. When it comes to the baseball, we've learned that, indeed, it also is subject to the laws of quantum physics. But here is the thing. When you apply those same quantum laws to a big object like a baseball, they say there's a 99.999999% chance that it will land over here, and a 0.0000, huge number of zeros and a one after, a chance that it will land over there. In other words, it always, by and large, lands where you think it should land, because when it comes to big objects, the probabilities get very skewed. They become hugely in favor of one outcome, and they suppress all other possibilities by assigning a tiny, tiny probability to them. But when it comes to electrons, the probabilities aren't so skewed. You know, 13% chance, 12% chance of this and so forth. And that's why the microworld is so different.
It's not even, in other words, a large part of that baseball's trajectory is determined for us by gravity, right?
Yeah.
But in that micro world that we're talking about, the quantum world, the effect of gravity is not the same, correct?
That turns out to be the case, but it's a somewhat secondary when it comes to this idea of probability. Because even gravity is subject to these probabilistic laws, it turns out.
Huh.
And that's what's so different. So prior to the advent of quantum physics, everybody thought, what is physics? Well, you tell me how things are today, and I'll tell you how they will be tomorrow. But then we learn with quantum physics, that's not how it works. You tell me how things are today, and I will tell you the probability that things will be one way or another tomorrow.
Huh.
And Einstein himself didn't like this idea. He said, physics is not in the business of making odds. Physicists are not bookies. He said,
yes.
This is not the physics that I know and love. And he spent many, many years trying to come up with a new theory that would go beyond quantum physics and show that the probabilities in quantum physics were simply an artifact of our lack of complete understanding. I mean, when you go and you listen to the news, the weatherman says, you know, 30% chance of rain tomorrow, 20% chance that it won't rain, and so forth. Now, that's not quantum physics. That's simply him saying we don't understand exactly what's going on, so this is the best we can do, give probabilities.
Yes.
Einstein wanted to say that must be the same thing with quantum physics. It's not real probabilities. It's just, you know, incomplete understanding.
So he was saying that if we have a full understanding, these motions will be fully understood and fully predictable.
Yes, that's what he hoped in his heart of hearts.
But he never got there.
Never got there, and now the data that has been accrued since his passing really seems to support the idea that the probabilities are fundamental, and that Einstein's ideas probably were not correct.
That we'll never get there.
That's right. That's the way it certainly seems today. Any sober assessment of the data seems to really support that idea.
All right. In the quantum world, I've heard it said, experiments at IBM and elsewhere, that two particles separated by perhaps immense amounts of space can be seen to do the same thing at the same time, implying there's a communication of some sort going on between these particles of a nature that we can't possibly understand yet. Is that true?
Well, you're referring to something that we call quantum entanglement.
Right.
And indeed, there are experiments along the lines of what you're saying, that you have particles that are very far apart, many miles apart, that seem to not be in communication with one another.
And yet
somehow whatever one particle does, the other one does too. It's a long-distance correlation, if you will. It's as if, roughly speaking, I give you a pair of dice, and you take one of those and you throw it in a casino in Atlantic City, and your friend takes the other one and throws it in a casino in Las Vegas. Each of them is coming up probabilistically, 1 through 6, but imagine that when you compare your results with your friend's result, you find that, oh my God, every time you got a 1, I got a 1. Every time you got a 3, I got a 3.
That's what's happening, right?
That's roughly what is happening. But what I would take exception to is, you mentioned that we can't understand it. And what I would say is, it turns out that quantum physics predicts that this will happen in certain circumstances. So in a sense, we understand it completely well. We can predict what will happen, and the experiments bear it out.
But we don't understand.
We don't have an intuition, a deep intuition of how this works.
In other words, at some level, there has to actually be a communication taking place.
Well, that's a sticking point. That's a subtle point, because communication makes it sound like the particles are somehow sending a signal back and forth.
Exactly.
In order to correlate their behaviors.
Yes.
And were that the case, we would be in trouble, because Einstein's relativity says nothing can go faster than the speed of light. That means no message can go faster than the speed of light, but these objects are correlating their behaviors instantaneously.